Backyard Green Films is proud to present this episode of Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Alara and her husband, Rick, travel throughout the land in their travel trailer, which they have nicknamed Bessie, bringing you stories about their travels and the people they meet. They visit farmers, ranchers, and just about anyone who loves putting their hands in the dirt or their feet in stirrups. In those travels, they have gotten to meet some very interesting people. Here's one of those interviews.
Hi, this is Alara. Welcome back to our podcast. We're back from New York, where we had a successful yet chaotic live stream experience with the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival. I'll fill you in on the joys and pains of trying to pull off a rather large production shoot the day after an ugly tax season deadline, while the migraine gods are shooting bolts at my head for 3 weeks straight, and they're coordinating with the weather gods, which contributed rain and wind to the mix. We all survived it, though, and our live stream went beautifully well, with a big thank you to the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association. I'll fill you in more when all of the bolts stop shooting. So, on to today. You know how there are people that do work, and then people that really do most of the work? These are the ones we all know, who end up doing the dishes every week at the end of church potluck, or that run the bake sales and the carpool list all year at PTA meetings. The people that basically don't usually get any of the glory, but they quietly go about getting things done. They're usually the ones you can depend on when the chips are down or the job is ugly. So, you might know stories of people like this. You call them the dependables, for lack of a better term. But I think that maybe you can relate to one of these situations. The universe has blessed most every population with a very small percentage of people who just plain get done. They don't do it for the glory, or the attention, or for any reason other than things just plain need to be done. The two people we're speaking with today on our podcast are just like that. They're two of my heroes in life. Not because they cured cancer, or they won the Nobel Prize, or they invented the device that sent robocallers to hell where they belong. They are heroes because looking straight ahead, putting your back into it, and doing the less than glamorous stuff uncomplainingly is one of the hardest things to do in life. It's sometimes thankless, often unpaid, and absolutely necessary to keep the world turning. I guess you could call this mother and daughter team farmers because they raise sheep and lavender and a precocious toddler on a farm in Pennsylvania. You could also call them businesswomen, artists, social coordinators, educators, influencers, and about 52 other descriptive terms as long as none of them were close to words like lazy, slacker, buck passer, or lollygagger. We've spoken with these two on one or two podcasts in the past, but pretty much only for little bursts. And that's because most every time we've met up with them, it's been October in Rhinebeck. Frankly, on that crazy busy weekend every year, you could clone them both, make four copies of each, and still wonder how they got everything done. I am, of course, speaking of two of the most talented, honorable, and hardworking people I have ever met, Jerry Robinson Lawrence and Irina Lawrence Mathias, who run a farm shop, imports, exports, plantings, kids, festivals, and still have time to be nice to their fellow man. Every year at the festival, Jerry and Irina tag team the whole weekend long. Irina mainly takes up charge of the Flying Fiber Shop booth, and Jerry runs the breed barn sheeple. Okay, I guess I should say sheep breed volunteers and representatives, but sheeple's lots more fun to say. In any case, Jerry can also be found in things like narrating the sheep show, coordinating hay and stall space, connecting just about everyone to just about everyone else, and negotiating an end to world hunger, all while taking shifts on managing a precocious toddler, which is often strapped to her chest as she goes about all that. They're both so constantly swamped with people that trying to get a word in with them is kind of like being transmuted into a sockeye salmon swimming up the Fraser River during the fall spawning run. So, earlier I said you might call these types of people dependable, but it's way too wimpy a word for the caliber of people we're dealing with here. This year, I've had an excruciatingly long tax year, and more travel miles than was strictly comfortable, a high school graduation, some surgical downtime. We've done two big show events, lots of filming, a few visits to urgent care, more very serious travel miles, and everything but the kitchen sink heading our way. That said, when I think it's getting a bit too nutty and I start to feel grouchy, I know that I should always stop and think of today's guests and strive to handle the chaos with as much grace and fortitude as these two fine women have handled most everything that comes their way. Now that I've spoken about the hairy parts of the zoo that is 2023, please join us for a moment from this summer on a little farm in Pennsylvania that brought me peace and joy just when I needed it. There were pastures dotted with multicolored Shetland sheep, chickens scratching in the yard, big friendly dogs just waiting to be scratched, sleepy cats lying about, and slopes covered in fragrant purple lavender blossoms and buzzing with bees. And the little farm and fiber shop that we know as Flying Fibers also has Jane, the Shetland lamb that we chose as our Backyard Green Films mascot. If there's anywhere that we want to go back to visit, this lovely little spot of heaven, perfectly blended with chaos, is it. And you can go there for a moment too if you hop over to see the next episode of Vicarious Agriculture on our YouTube channel. Here are two of my favorite heroes in life, Jerry and Irene.
So today we're going to go down past the lavender first, and then we're going to go into the barn and do our typical morning chores. Okay. And we've got chickens and geese and sheep. Lots of sheep.
Okay, a few of your typical morning chores, because I'm sure it's not really limited.
Yeah, no. It goes on all day, but there's a morning routine where everyone gets fed.
Okay.
So the morning routine is pretty typical.
Okay, so now behind us, you have a gorgeous background here, and we have this is your neighbor's field.
It's my neighbor's wheat field. They call it the Three Sisters. They rotate one crop a year, so it's corn and then wheat and soy. I'm not sure if soy is the traditional of the Three Sisters.
Want a little nitrogen in the ground, I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's behind us here. And then on this side, there's something that you said is fairly new, but that looks pretty established. Tell me about this.
It was planted 2 years ago, mm-hmm. so it's the third year of our 500 lavender plants. 200 were the first year, and 300 more, maybe something like that. And we're up to 500 now. We just put in about another 250 last week. And we have, I think, 6 different varieties of lavender, both culinary and the craft good smelling stuff. So we started with the lavender because it's a natural moth repellent.
Yeah.
So that's what got us interested. And now we've just gone crazy with it. And
yeah, so that's such a phenomenal thing that it's got a huge impact, and people don't really think about it. You not only have to take care of the sheep and take care of the wool, but you have to make sure that the thing doesn't get destroyed by moths somewhere in the middle.
Yes,
on
yes.
both sides.
You don't
so
want
this
your,
is
yes.
great.
It's absolutely perfect. It was a perfect addition. It works on our hillsides because we're not flat anywhere. It works that way. It requires good drainage.
Yes.
So you don't want a hillside just because it could be runoff, but we've modified the so that it's a very good drainage, and lavender thrives on high and dry.
Yeah, it's not just because it looks so pretty there on the hill?
Not just because it looks pretty.
It's just gorgeous the way this accents this. Okay, so now you're going to take us down to Flying Fibers.
Yes.
Which is your shop.
The shop, which is right next to the barn and the lavender.
And your sheep.
And the sheep.
And what kind of sheep are we going to see?
You're going to see primarily Shetland sheep, but there is also a Leicester long wool down there and a North American Wensleydale.
Excellent. And we also have an English breed in the garage.
In the garage, usually called the husband.
Called the husband. Where is he from?
He's originally from Yorkshire, and he's responsible for all of this because he took me to Yorkshire. And sheep, sheep, sheep everywhere.
That's the beginning of the end of all things.
That was the beginning of
the
end.
Yeah, I married a film guy, and now, you know, you see where
that
goes.
The beginning of the end.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Not for me, but for him, probably. Okay, well, take us on down there.
All right, come on down.
You have gorgeous, I want to say speckled Sussex, is that right?
Yes, there are some primarily speckled Sussex.
Except a little bantam breed, too, or is that just
the bantams are Nankins. From Colonial Williamsburg.
Ah.
The bigger rooster is a cross, so he's somebody in here. Rini, what's this one? Is that the Barn of Elder?
No, Cuckoo Moran.
Cuckoo Moran is this, looks similar to them, but a little bit different.
So you got a nice dark brown egg maybe?
And then a Barnevelder is back there, the brown and black.
Yeah, German breed, I want to say, right?
Yes, and they were just... Yes, we see! Where's your chickens? Are we going to feed them? And this is Ginny, one of the barn cats.
Watch out behind you. There goes the
chicken run. Lavender is a lot of work for a short period of time. But if you get close and are quiet and just listen to the hum.
Ah.
And look at the number of bees. So it's just phenomenal. So there's actually some lavenders called Phenomenal. It's actually a lavender that was developed for Pennsylvania. But what you have in front of you is Hidcote, which is a culinary variety. And then the lighter purple on the left, which didn't do so well this winter, is Munstead, traditional English lavender. And up above is Provence.
Wow.
And the Provence, they all bloom a little bit different. So these come first.
The Munstead
and the Hidcote come first, and then the Provence comes after that.
Now you said bees, and we're thinking European honeybees, but I am seeing all kinds of pollinators.
All kinds.
There's two different varieties of butterflies
yep.
going on here, at least that I see immediately.
Makes my day.
Plus a larger, almost like a bumblebee type bee.
Yes, almost like a carpenter bee.
Yes,
I noticed
like
that
right
yesterday.
There. I see them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
I was seeing the big chubby bees yesterday. That's why I love to sit on my bench over there in the evening and just enjoy this for a little while. The butterflies will then get swallowtails. I haven't seen any monarchs, but a lot of different kinds of swallowtails. And these, I think these are actually cabbage moths, I've been told, which aren't good if you're growing cabbage. But... So
probably
hopefully,
good in the pollinator universe anyway, right?
Good in the pollinator universe. So I'm calling all the cabbage moths to my patch, lavender patch, because I'm not growing it. So hopefully I'm saving my neighbor's cabbage.
All that and the pretty view as well, right?
Yeah, I know.
So is it hard to grow lavender? Because I do have lavender
yes.
in my yard, but it seems to be, I do that fern leaf kind, just because that seems to be commonly available in the nurseries.
Now that could be either a Spanish or a French, which Irina is my scientist.
I don't have the bunny leaf Spanish kind. I don't have that. The one that looks like a little rabbit with little longer leaves on the top.
Okay.
But the fern leaf is more of a traditional. It's kind of halfway between those two. I actually like this, except the leaves are a lacier. And I do have some of this. So what is your, when you're looking at this and you start growing lavender, what is your success and fail gotta haves? Drainage, you said, is one.
Drainage. Mm-hmm. High and dry is what they say. So a traditional hillside here in Pennsylvania, where we are, is 99% clay.
Okay.
The
so drainage is an
opposite.
Issue.
Yeah. Drainage is an issue. So we actually had to alter the soil. So we had a lot of, first, partly why this all started. The runoff from this hill was actually causing issues in our pasture, which is downhill from this. So everything was coming from beyond the house to the neighbor's house, all downhill and just taking out my pasture. So we needed to improve the drainage on this hillside. I hate mowing. I would take over the whole property with flowers and things if I could.
But you have sheep. Are you serious? You shouldn't even have to think about mowing.
Shouldn't have to think about mowing.
No, but then you have to let them run.
Yes. So we actually had to use the post hole digger to dig all of these holes to about 12 inches deep, 12 inches wide. And then I replaced it with a peat moss type material, perlite, lime, and pea gravel. Now my newest area, we did something different. We used limestone, and the peat moss mix has perlite in it. So it's actually 50% drainage to 50% dirt to hold the roots together. It's really, it prefers loamy. So a lot of people, like out your way, they might use a sand and rock mix.
Yes.
If you add sand to clay, you get cement.
Yes.
So we have to do something completely different. So as crazy as it sounds, Matthew and I stood on this crooked hillside and it took weeks to plant this first area just 2 years ago. The other trick is to not allow them to bloom in year one. So when you see the spikes come, you have to trim them back and let the roots grow more deeply.
Tell me about this place.
Flying Fibers was actually Jerry's thing first. We say established 2001 because that's when you had started machine knitting.
Machine knitting. I'm losing track of the years now. So I used to knit my graphics, and it came to the point where I couldn't get the wool I wanted, and I couldn't get the colors I wanted. So I started to buy yarn and dye it to get what I wanted. And I realized after a few years of craft shows that what I actually like is the color and the wool. So at some point I said, I'm not doing craft shows anymore, and selling hats and things that I made, handbags, things like that. Because they were unique fine art pieces, and people would say, can you make it in another color? And the answer was no. It's not how I worked. So it just led, all of that led to ultimately sheep and yarn and...
Right. So then at one point when she was like, I need to start getting textiles that I'm enjoying working with. So we were like, well, Matthew's from England, my dad, right? Matthew's from England. So we should be able to, start importing. Importing is so easy, right? So she started importing... I was 10, our very first Maryland sheep and wool, and so almost 20 years ago now. And she started by importing raw wool from, raw wool and combed top and some yarn. We carried one organic line for Garthenor. They're a pretty big brand now, actually, in, the hand-knitting world. And she would dye it and then sell it in England. And the only...
Sell it at
Fiber
Maryland,
Festivals. Bringing it in from England. And it sort of just kept...
Growing,
and the last season we did a bunch of festivals before opening our shop. We did 13 in a fall season.
Wow. In addition to teaching,
and my sister...
So you were 10 and 7.
I was 10, and so she would...
And they would be dragged with me.
Yeah, and she would pick us up Friday from school with, the camper. We had a pop-up camper, and that's where the booth would be stored for travel, because we had the old Toyota, so there wasn't as much, drive us to wherever, set up the pop-up camper, set up the booth, stay overnight, home Sunday, in school on Monday, and working on Monday.
Now, people that hear, 14 festivals, they have no frame of reference.
But
I know that if the festival is Rhinebeck or the National Western or whatever, it takes you weeks to prepare for the thing.
Weeks to prepare.
You do the thing at the time and run on fumes by the time you're at the end. Coffee at the beginning, fumes at the end, or... all the above, anywhere in the middle. And then it takes you weeks to recover from it because it's a really intense event. Yep. So for you to say you did 14 festivals is a little insane.
She did 14 festivals. Well, then also parenting two kids, because, dad was coaching soccer and it's his season, so he wasn't available on the weekends to watch. So she's like, all right, kids, we're going to the show. And it got
cooking in the tent.
Yes. And it got to the point where... we realized that we were doing enough of these that
there was a burnout.
There was a burnout. And so
I couldn't keep doing 13, 14 in a season.
Yeah. And you were helping a friend with a fiber arts shop that they had. And then one of the sales associates managers that used to work for us back in the beginning, they worked really well together. So something happened and Jerry and this person were running this shop, and Jerry and this person were running this shop, and they realized that
we can do this ourselves.
Yes. So October of 2009, she found the shop that we had in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, for 12 years then. And we had a month to paint everything, load it up, get it going. And Flying Fibers was born in its brick and mortar store era. So it's gone through all of these sort of changes and paces. And then we were what we were at the shows: sustainable, locally grown, sustainable, ethically sourced, hand-dyed.
Rare breed.
We started moving to being just a typical yarn store where we were getting in all the big brands, washables, different colors, changing out with the seasons. And it was okay.
But it wasn't what our passion or mission was.
And it didn't feel good.
Didn't feel right.
Good.
I couldn't sell things I didn't
good.
Believe in.
Yes, but that's sort of the quandary, isn't it?
And yes.
For everybody.
Every
you want to get
business.
Big enough to be sustainable,
right.
And yet you don't want to lose that thing that made you what you are.
Right.
So the reality is efficiency is super important, right?
Right.
Right.
So how do you capture that the magic portion of what makes you
right.
you and yet not lose that rest of it to efficiency?
And one of us is going to have to go run and check on the third generation.
Yes.
Are you coming? She's coming. She discovered something.
What did you find?
Grammy!
What did you find?
Ksenia Riley, where's my girl?
Come on out!
Where's the sheep?
Do you want to lead them back?
Want to go see the sheep?
Let's go see the
Show
sheep.
Show me the sheep.
And we'll keep talking.
Maybe if Grandma goes, she'll go.
Come on, Grandma. Take Grandma. Take me back to the sheep.
Boy, what a lovely thing to be raised on a farm and be able to go play with sheep and lavender all day, huh?
It's so wonderful to watch her enjoy all of this.
You have a lamb just for us.
Yes. Oh, that's...
We appreciate you arranging that.
Is that why you were calling us? Did you see Douglas? So, we'll be able to get them all very close.
But yeah, so it just didn't feel like we were doing what was right for us. So I like to say that even though the shop was around in 2009, we sort of had a rebirth in 2015, we started putting our fingers on the pulse. 2016, we released our Yorkshire Medley yarn line. And then 2017 was when we were like, okay, we're back to our roots.
You see the babies? Good girl, empty it out. So she knows my chores.
You're learning them young, huh?
So we tip it out, say no poop, no poop.
Are you helping? I noticed that you got the boots on. That's a good thing, huh?
And
well, this is one of the really amazing things about certain breeds, right? Shetlands are from a very barren area, and if I remember properly, they're Viking sheep, right? They came across
way back when,
yeah. And so they got dumped on an island. There's not a whole lot of nutrients. They may or may not have originated there, and so they have to adapt.
And they survived on the Shetland Islands with that wind and rain and torrential weather, humans did not interfere with them at all. They just allowed them to exist. I don't know, did they think they were too small? I don't know why they left them alone, but they're considered primitive, and they are so healthy, so hardy. I don't have to give them a dewormer, hardly ever. I think I gave one some last year, but that's it. And I hate to say this, my big guy here, this is my North American Wensleydale. That's Roro who comes.
North American Wensleydale.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's Rowan because he's the one who comes to Rhinebeck, hence his forelocks staying on. Okay. This is Douglas. Isn't he sweet? Douglas was just born last Tuesday or Wednesday. Here's Douglas. Do you want to come? Tuesday? So, say hi to Douglas. She loves Douglas. That's his mom, you hear her? That's his mommy calling. Here he is. I've got him. She's is that Douglas? You got Douglas? Can you give him a kiss? Thank you.
This kid's going to have a great bacterial load, isn't she?
Yep, yep. And look, they can have, look at his wool. Like, if you look at the top, he looks dark brown and black, but move it, and he's actually a light gray in there.
Do I dare put her down? She's
yeah, she's fine.
Lost in the
She
mass.
Says I move. Look at the light gray in there.
Yes.
So he's actually, he may, and look here, these like blondie pieces.
Wow.
So we don't actually know what color he'll be, but he's just delightful. Look at Mom looking for him.
Where's Mom?
She's coming. Mom is called Nancy Sinatra. Nancy! Nancy! Here he is.
Is that the badger? Is that, do I say badger face? No, that's not badger face.
With the Shetlands, it is, but they don't call them badger face.
So that white stripe down the muzzle with the black on the sides is...
What is she, Ree? Ree is also better at what... There's 11 colors and 30-some patterns. Here.
Very black tongue.
Here's Douglas. Yes. Here he is. Here's Douglas. Look, and the other babies are trying to get her milk, and she knows... Here's Douglas. Who do you want to get next? Who do you want to get? Look at, we got, this is Charlie. Do you remember Charlie? Charlie bit my finger. This is Charlie. Yes. So, Ree, any color names?
Oh, he is a, I'm blanking. I write them all down when they're born.
So there are these fabulous names like Smurzlet and Golmajet.
I think he is like a Mort Smurzlet, actually.
How old did you say?
A month.
He was born
But look at the horns on that animal.
Yes.
Well, right. So then Peter Pan. Oh, he's up there. Okay, that big black one. Also a ram. Born May 1st, I think. No horns. He's the polled one that we're...
That cannot be comfortable. How big were those horns when...
No, Buds. Nubs.
Just nubs, that's it.
So
wow,
if
look
you
at the
catch,
growth.
If we can catch him, here he is.
So most of these
this
are Shetlands, is that what I'm hearing?
Or what?
Most are Shetlands?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, 11 colors, 33 different patterns. Look at this one eating off the other's back. That's Coco. She is just delightful. She's a... The baby is actually Miss July. Isn't that heavenly?
I could just sit and pet these guys all day long and look and feel
how
they're
curled. She's a Leicester. This one here is a Leicester long wool. And she's considered a blue, English blue.
Look at that.
Isn't she delightful?
Gorgeous color. So is she delightful because of the personality, or do you look at that and say, look at that wool?
Look at the wool. All of the above. Actually, though, I would have to say her wool is a little bit more like a Wensleydell. So it's not a good example of Leicester wool, even though it's lovely. Where it waves, and the tagline for the Leicesters is ride the wave, they tend to wave more. This tight little pearl, that's more indicative of a Wensleydell.
Okay, so she's 100% Leicester?
She is 100% Leicester.
Right. So you want uniformity from front to back in terms of
the
coat, or no? Or
is that want uniformity overall. And they should look like a table with four legs.
Okay.
So she's a little chubby at the moment, so at least you know with the drought, I'm still...
She's an oak table, right? And not a birch table.
She's not quite...
But boy,
I'm trying to look at her legs, but they really should just be like a table.
I think that's all I see. Yeah, your hands are soft. Now, when you shear this, say you're going to sell the fleece of this particular animal.
Yep.
And you shear this, it's going to be part dark, part light, correct?
Yep.
Or no? So then, is it always going to be dark in this space up front and light in that space in the back, or will it change over time?
She won't change over time. Her spots will stay where they are. A hand spinner would keep the colors separate intentionally. When we take it to the mill, we let them blend it. So we'll actually get a gray yarn.
Now, you'll let them blend everything from all this sheep or everything from all the sheep?
Nope. All of her. Sometimes if we don't have enough, like these two will go together because they're similar.
And their daughters.
And their daughters. Will go as well. See, isn't this wild? It just comes, and I'm not hurting her. It's just
so you
was
you,
ready to go.
As a hand spinner, though, you want uniformity in just the mostly the quality and the caliber of the type of wool.
Length.
Right? I mean,
more so length. Well, and there's bits that you would never use. Like if you look along the leg down here, this is referred to as breech, and it's just not very nice. It has no wave to it, no curl to it. Same on them. Do you see it on her? It almost looks like dog hair.
Now, that's not very nice for the purpose of spinning.
Correct.
But it still has the characteristics of wool, insulation, you know, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
we actually just got back like 150 pounds of wool fertilizer pellets from the sort of, I don't want to call it the garbage, but for us, we just use it as like mulch and stuff, but we decided to just take it up and we had it turned into wool fertilizer pellets. And so it's a 905 like guaranteed analysis. So it's got 9% nitrogen, no of the phosphate, and then 5% potash.
So it's a spring, is that right? Well, I'm trying to remember my NPK thing. Up, out, and around, right? The growth.
You know more than me.
Out, yeah, you see where it's gone out of my brain.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But so this is something that you could use in the spring, and then it might still be around in the fall, but it slowly releases, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, it's a slow release, okay. Yeah. And so it's a nice way, it's a fairly economical way. We didn't quite realize how much we were dropping off of what we would get back. So we were a little bit like shocked when
bags.
We kind of were shocked when we were like, oh, it was that much, that many pounds. But it's fine because I've been using it. My dad's been using it. We've also had, so we put some out for sale.
So it's our first time with this.
It's our first time, but it's a nice sustainable way to be like, okay, if we want a value-added product from the quote-unquote garbage part, you know, because otherwise we just...
Well, we use it on the farm for drainage purposes. So over there where we're starting to build that hillside up, we would actually, when the fella comes to shear, the belly is waste, the legs are waste.
Waste, right?
I mean, waste.
Because not really waste.
It's not really waste. It has a different purpose. So we put that down first, and then we'll put the hay and everything on top of it. So there's differences in Shetlands. What I love about them, though, and people have different thoughts, just like I said, they shouldn't be grained, but I have no pasture right now where I'm healing it because of the drought. There are also philosophies on the actual wool. So she would be considered, and they're known to have diversity of fleece even on one animal. So it doesn't mean just that one can look that way and that one can look that way. You can see that this wool is different and longer than this wool back here, which is finer. And if I put my glasses on, it's got a bit of crimp or wave to it. Mm-hmm. And then if I can get to, I'm going to go over here to, that is Tinkerbell. So when you see, like, hers is different from Pearls. This is Coco.
So you're saying there's a kind of a sector that wants the Shetlands to be uniform. Is that
uniformly
right?
Fine.
But
yes.
That's not how the breed, I mean, is it?
It's not what I like. I prefer the diversity of the fleece, and I actually prefer what they refer to as rustic, like on Coco. So I prefer the rustic because it grows longer and it's a little bit stronger.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe. This is how we keep going. And please ask your friends to join us. Please also feel free to post any comments or questions to our social media sites. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook under Backyard Green Films. Thanks again for listening.
We want to thank Jerry and Irina for joining us today. And if you'd like to find out more about their farm and the sheep that they raise, please visit flyingfibers.com. We'll see you next time with another adventure. You have been listening to Agriculture with your host, Alara Bowman. Please tune in for upcoming episodes from our travels. I'm Rick Bowman, your behind-the-scenes editor. Until next time. This has been a presentation of Backyard Green Films Productions. All rights reserved. Copyright 2023.